Okay, now that we're all gathered together, pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father,
Oh, Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Dearest Mother,
Beloved David,
Beloved David,
David,
Saints and sages of all religions,
Saints and
sages
Sages of all religions,
I bow to you all.
I bow to you all.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual ability.
Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Be thou the only king reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Peace,
Peace.
bliss,
Good.
amen.
Amen.
Our subject for this evening is the end of suffering. And doesn't that sound good? Suffering's a very interesting topic because for many of us, it's what drove us onto the path. You know, they always talk about the carrot and the stick. And the carrot, of course, is the love for God, that attraction that we feel to goodness, divinity, upliftment, clarity, peace, and ultimately bliss and connection with the divine. But what can drive us to that is a lot of tough aspects of life. And no matter what kind of a life you've had or how it's looked on the outside, every single one of us has our tough moments, our tough times. Sometimes it's tough for a day, sometimes it's tough for weeks, and sometimes it's tough for years. And when we put out the prayer requests every Sunday, I always realize that, you know, somebody somewhere is having a tough time. You know, they're having a health problem. Maybe the situations in their life aren't going too well. You know, it's so interesting to observe Mother. And I met Mother when she was 72 years old. So I met her in the latter part of her life. And she was, I met her in the mid-70s, about 1976. And she was so robust. She was so full of life. She was so full of energy, of vivacious. She had a twinkle in her eyes. She had a sparkle. She was full of life. She told me once we were walking through the Bon Marché, one of her favorite stores. It was close to her home. And she told me she had had three marriage proposals in the last 6 months, all from men that were much younger than her. And, you know, and you have to wonder why. And she just had this incredible magnetism. She had this life energy. People just wanted to be close to her. They wanted to be around her. They wanted any part of Mother that they could get. And then in about 1981, she was coming back from a world trip and she fell. She broke her knees. She had a stroke. And all of a sudden, Mother was going through the toughest time I've ever seen any human being go through. And I've had, you know, at that point in my life, I'd had grandparents, I'd seen them in old folks' homes, I'd seen different situations. But, you know, they suffered for a short amount of time and then they left the body and that was that. Well, Mother, that happened to her in 81. And she was very physically compromised from that point forward. She didn't leave the body until 1991. So that was 10 years. And there were times, and David talks about this, she had shingles and she was in such tough shape, you could barely recognize her. And I noticed that people started dropping out of the group. They started leaving. And all of a sudden, Mother wasn't this vivacious, fun, full of life, you know, bigger than life character that they had known. And they said probably to themselves, well, this isn't much fun anymore. You know, I'm going to get out of here and find the next cool thing. And of course, if you realize what Mother is and what her message is, nothing has changed. The message is go to God. She was the greatest proponent of that I had ever met. And that was still there in all of its power. But the point is that here's this God-realized master, and you know she's God-realized. Every part of your being, every experience that you have with her, every exposure, every teaching, you know that she's absolutely of the highest. And yet you look and you see this physical debilitation, this weakness, open lesions, shingles. It was really, really rough. And she was still an incredible inspiration because she would somehow make it to church and stand behind that podium and give a talk. And she was, to me, she was just as tremendous as she had ever been, but in the physical outward presentation, not as much. So what's going on there? And was Mother suffering? And of course, David tells this story of Mother coming to him in his dream. And she's saying, do you think that that form is what I am? And that I'm in my light body. And Mother was above it, but she was playing the role in the drama of this life so perfectly, so well. It was just as believable and real as can be. So what happens is we get caught up in the drama of life, and I don't think it's even an accident. I think we're actually drawn and attracted to the drama of life. So we hear about, you know, things happening to people, tough things. There's car crashes, there's accidents. Lots of things have happened to people in this group. There was a plane crash up in Alaska. Just some really tough things that would happen. And we get drawn into that and we get drawn into these events. There's, the birth of a new baby, a marriage, somebody passing away, somebody gets cancer. And we get involved in that and we get enmeshed in that and we are drawn. There's some part of us that are drawn to this charge of life, this drama that is this world. And, you know, it's really interesting to get Paramahansa Yogananda's master's take on this. And he says, you know, you don't withdraw from the world. You don't become one that doesn't care and is apathetic. And this is an interesting meaning of the word dispassion. When the masters talk about dispassion, they're not talking about being in a state where you don't care or being apathetic, but you are in a state where you see the world, you see what's happening in the world, and you play your part and you play it well. If you're a dad, if you're a mom, a brother, a sister, if you're an employer, a boss, if you're an employee, if you're doing volunteer work, if you're trying to help somebody else, you do that to your absolute best ability. And we saw that with Mother and we saw that with David. They go over the top to help us. They'll do anything. They'll stay up late. They'll get up early. They'll go the extra mile. They'll do whatever they can to help us. And yet they are not drawn into the drama to the point where it affects them and it affects their mood and how they are. Master gave a really fascinating talk on this subject. And the analogy that he used was that of a movie theater, going into a movie theater. And I actually found that talk, and of course I could describe it to you, but he's so much better at explaining this. And it's a fascinating talk. So we're just going to take a few minutes to listen to Master tell us about how to approach life. And he says this is life's biggest secret. And so we're all involved in this life. We all have all kinds of issues and matters that are of great importance to us. We have our families. We have our work. We wonder how we're going to survive, will we ever be able to retire? What's our body going to be like? Are we going to be healthy? We have all these things that we're thinking about all the time. So Master gives us a big clue, a big insight into how to approach that. So I'm going to play that for you right now.
When you look at your body, when you look at the world, it seems that you are engaged with everything, that you have no time for God. But every night, He dissolves your body in the subconscious sphere and makes you realize that you are not a man nor a woman, but a piece of consciousness, a reflection of His consciousness sleeping in space, in joy. The drama of sleep gave me the greatest faith in God. When anybody told me I am made in the image of God, I laughed. Because I couldn't see in this frail body the image of God. But Master said, in this subconscious mirror of sleep, you find that you are infinite. That every night you become the infinite. You are not man nor woman. You are joyous and happy and conscious. For when you wake up, you always know that you are never unconscious in sleep. You exactly know how you sleep. Only you are not conscious of your body. But you are conscious of your real self. And the nest of your troubles starts with the body. So all the gifts and kindness that you have given to me, I want to give this gift to you. Remember these two natures in you. The nature as a man, as a human being during the day, and the nature as God at night. As I often say, we are all gods at night, but we become devils during the day. And if we can be gods during the day, we are gods all the time. And this purpose of life must not be drowned in the various engagements with matter. We must remember, if God says, I have no time for you, and stops sticking in your heart, all your engagements have to be cancelled immediately. For one of the great sayings in India is, he is the cleverest who finds God. He is the cleverest who gives time to find God. He is the cleverest who finds that supreme happiness within. And you can stand unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. He whose peace, the riches of peace, cannot be taken away by all the robbers of circumstances and trials. So in this spiritual family, you all remind me by your actions of one whom millions forget, and that's why they suffer. I remember one day I was in the movies. Movies has one fascination because I see the whole world as movies. I was in the booth and I saw the operator was reading a novel. And I saw this automatic machine was going on and the beam was causing on the screen a terrible horror picture. And I said, Lord, how is it? I have the whole show of the universe in front of me. You are this operator who is thinking of new plays and your nature is throwing this beam in the sky. And I see the hero and the villain are nothing but pictures. Nobody is killed. Many were being killed and shot in this picture, but I saw from the booth, it was the light that had created the villain, and the light had created the hero. And a voice said, remember, the villain is created so that you don't become the villain, but that you love the hero. If you become the villain, your throat has to be cut. And now you see that there is no villain, no hero. They are both pictures of my beam. After getting away from the villain and evil, or tasting poison honey, taste the honey of goodness and then come into the beam. And you will realize that all this world which you see of terrible wars and troubles is nothing but a picture show, cosmic motion picture show in the sky. You will be surprised. You never analyze that as soon as you sleep and dream, you can create a world like this. With people suffering from cancer and disease and wars and some smiling babies born, old men dying, then when you wake up, you see that all those things were made of your dream consciousness. So remember, this is the same, nothing different. And until you find that out, this world is a terrible show. I said to God, as He was talking to me, but Lord, look at the audience. They are howling and screeching downstairs at this horror show. I see that it's nothing but pictures and light, because I see the invisible beam. There are no murders in the beam, no heroes, not villains in the beam. But Lord, what about the audience? They don't know it. Then the voice said, tell them all to look at my beam within, and they will realize that this show was given to entertain them, not to get mixed up with it. That's why, remember, every night He makes you a god. Every night He withdraws you from this movie, cosmic movies, and makes you realize you are the Son of God. You are made in His image. You cannot be violated or hurt by stones, nor bombs, nor machine guns, nor atomic bombs. Remember, the best shelter is in the silence of your soul. And if you can develop that silence, nothing in the world, nothing in the world can touch you. And you can say, Janglabdha chaparam labham mannate nadikam tata. Having which no other gain becomes greater. Then you can stand unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. Then you are not in any way touched by cold and heat, pleasure and pain. But as soon as you are touched by these, you are with the movies. So I realize this world with terrible wars and troubles. When I see the injustices, I cannot uphold the Father. But when I see that light dancing around me, this is the picture show, then I say, glory to the Father. So remember, on one little piece of thought is the whole universe resting, and when the rub of the thought at night, the whole universe tumbles away. You do not realize that the ocean is present in every drop, and that great power of God is present in every thought. And I do hope that in your kindness to me, you remember this that I told you. Do not get mixed up with this movie, this terrible movie of God. There is one purpose, to get to the beam. Get away from the villain and villainous action and poisoned honey of evil. Drink with the hero, the good honey of virtue, then get to the beam. Then you will suddenly realize it was only a show. History has no meaning for me, for God can revive the past in the present and the present in the future. There is no time nor space, everything is happening in your own thought. If you realize that, you will realize the infiniteness of God, and the kindness of God, and the love of God He has one thing in mind. He has thrown out from his beam the well and the good. And he wants to bring them back and make them one with the beam.
Master does such a beautiful job. He's so uniquely powerful in the way he speaks about God and about our experience of God and our experience of the world. And he equates it to being in a movie theater and getting drawn into the drama of the story and identifying with the villain and the hero and the people in the story and what's happening to them. And he very much says that it's no different in this world. We get drawn in, we become, in our minds, we become a part of it, we identify with it, and that is the source of our suffering. And then he begins by saying that at night, when we go to sleep, we forget it all. We become as God once again, and then we wake up and become enmeshed once again in the world. And it's a fascinating idea. And the solution is to put our minds on God and realize that this is all part of God's play. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be ups and downs in your life. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to take them very, very seriously. But it's important to detach ourselves and to take a half a step back and be with God while we're observing this, knowing that it's God's will and it's all through God's doing. I'm going to read an excerpt from a writing of David's, and he talks about suffering at one point in this post, and he talks about the source of suffering. So David says, "There is much written by saints and realized masters as to what the goal of spiritual practice is. However, no matter how perfect the words for its description, there's no replacing actual God contact and having direct experience of those realized states of consciousness. To live in divine consciousness is the greatest accomplishment of a lifetime because it does the greatest good for the individual, and it has the most powerful uplifting effect upon all creation. If someone is starving, they must of course have food. And if someone is in excruciating pain, they should have some relief. But in meeting such immediate needs, a temporary solution is given to a temporary problem, no matter how great the need in the moment and how good it is to be able to offer relief. The deeper, long-lasting suffering of humanity is found in the mind and soul. Identifying this suffering is the first step in the recovery of the consciousness that leads to long-term happiness." And this is where David tells us the cause of suffering. He says, after identifying that it is separation from divine consciousness that is the cause of this suffering, separation from divine consciousness. That's where all loneliness comes from. It's where all isolation comes from. It's when a soul is bereft. It's when the suffering, it's where it comes from. After identifying that it is separation from divine consciousness that is the cause of this suffering, we must go about how to get relief from this mental and spiritual pain. Deep analysis shows that so much suffering comes about due to the attachment we have to the things and situations of this world. That's essentially what Master just told us with his analogy of the movie theater. Attachment makes us think that our happiness is dependent upon having certain situations or objects. And if we do not have them, then we are miserable. Or if we have them and they are taken away, then we're unhappy. Real happiness is to be found within and is not dependent upon these outer conditions. If happiness is thought to stem from something that is temporary, and what in this world is not temporary, then happiness will always be followed by pain when that temporary situation changes. That's the nature of duality. This understanding makes us know that only by finding an unshakable source of happiness within that transcends the things of time and space will make for a solution to suffering. Great saints and spiritual masters who have gone into the laboratories of their own deepened experience tell us that there is an eternal font of joy and bliss to be found within. This font does not run dry. It's not dependent upon outer conditions and makes us know the truth of who and what we truly are. This truth is known through direct experience. It is portable, going with us wherever we go, and transcends the limited human mind. One might well ask, if this is true, why is the whole world not running after unending happiness? And really, that's a most poignant question. But the answer is in what was said earlier about attachment. It acts as a screen that hides the simple truth. A child has a toy and sees another child with another toy. At first, the child is happy with their own toy. But when he sees the other child with a different toy, he cries such tears at the thought of not having the other toy. We must give up attachment first, and the truth is revealed. But we do not like to give up our attachments, having come to believe that our happiness lies in having certain things or situations. However, when you have a ready and simple faith, you find the truth is not far away. Having the willingness to open your heart and mind to the radiant presence already existing within reveals the doorway to this most wonder-filled and exciting experience that can be had by all. You do not need to build complicated creeds and beliefs. In fact, that's contrary to the prime simplicity that gets you entry. Let go of all thoughts that happiness lies out there somewhere and open your mind and heart to the divine revelation that is seeking out an opportunity for awakening you now. Let us join together, if not in person, then in spirit, and seek out this omnipresent presence that is also seeking you. Once again, David puts it so eloquently, such a master at describing these complex spiritual conundrums and situations, and breaks it down in a way that is so easy for us to understand. I think what's so fascinating about being on the spiritual path, there's so many fascinating aspects of it, but I think the most fascinating thing is to observe yourself. And we say to ourselves, and if you're here tonight, and if you're watching this, you're on the path. You want God. You want God with all your heart, and you're doing the things that are necessary to bring God greater and greater fulfillment within yourself. So it's so fascinating to watch and see this dichotomy that takes place within ourselves. We want God, and yet, as David says, we have our attachments. We want other things as well. We want this situation. We want that to work out. We want so many things for ourselves, and then once we have children or once we have loved ones, we want things for them. And it makes us suffer. It makes us so sad when we see people that we love doing things that they shouldn't, or doing things that we know are going to bring them suffering. And my heart really goes out to the mothers of the world, because they never stop being mothers, and they care so much about what happens to their children, and they worry and they fret, and they just so much want their children to be happy. It's a beautiful thing to watch. It's a beautiful sentiment. And my heart goes out to them. I know their mothers have that special load to bear, and they hold this special place in our hearts and in society for that reason. And we get so drawn into these things that we want, and we want things to work out. And we get upset when they don't work out, and when things start to fall apart or disintegrate. And we have great emotional attachment to these outcomes. And it's difficult to stand there and observe and watch these things happen in life and just, you know, kind of say it's God's will. But what we do, and the solution, is to go within ourselves and not just dismiss it, not just dismiss these things as being of no consequence. We recognize they're of great consequence, and we do everything we can to do right in the world and to do right action and to create good for ourselves and the ones we love and the world. We do everything we can, but we realize that it's God that is doing the action. God is making the things happen. And if we're attuned with God, if we go within and we tap into that spirit, God guides us and God works through us. We had a meeting, a Zoom to God meeting this last Saturday, where we talked about God being co-creators with God, listening to that spirit and being guided by that and seeing the different ways that God works through us in our lives. And I think that is the secret to going through this world. And it's the secret for going through the tough parts of this world. And if you've even little children, you see, they are happy one moment, they're sad the next, they're crying, and then the tears go away and they're happy again. And we kind of get a kick out of them, and they give us a great twinkle in our eye, and we love them. But the truth of the matter is we're not so much different. And sometimes we look at a child and we think, you know, if you really knew that none of this mattered, if it's okay, if you dropped your toy, we can get it for you. You'll have it back in no time. It's all right. And I think sometimes that's how it is for us. Is, yeah, things might not look great at the moment, but we keep our focus on God. We keep our center. We keep contact with that peaceful center inside of ourselves. This part that's detached. This part that floats above it all. And when we make contact with that, when we go within and we feel that, we intuitively know everything's going to be okay. We might have lost our toy for the moment. Something might have broken. Something might have made us cry. But when we go within, when we stop for a moment and we withdraw from the drama and we go within, we realize it's going to be all right. And what's fun about being on the path, what's so fascinating about being on this path, is you can constantly do experiments with yourself. We have conscious direction over where our mind goes and where our consciousness goes. And that's a wonderful thing. That is something that God gave to us, that we have this free will and that we can guide our minds and we can guide our consciousness. And of course, the whole point of this existence is to learn how to guide our consciousness back to our true selves, back to God. But he gives us complete freedom, complete leeway to put our minds wherever we want. Well, when you're on the path, you experiment with different states of consciousness and you make observations and you see to yourself and you say to yourself, okay, how did that turn out? How was that? And how do I feel when I meditate and I'm done meditating? And how does that contrast with other times of the day and other states of consciousness? And perhaps when I'm in the hubbub of life and I'm in the middle of it and I'm working really hard and things are going on around me, perhaps I can find a little bit of that calm and that peace. You know, Master is such an incredibly dynamic speaker in the way he states things. And he said in there in the talk that we just listened to that as worlds are crashing around you, you are calm. And I just loved that analogy. The entire universe could be coming apart at the seams. And here you are in that center with God, that place inside of you that's peaceful and delightful and wonderful and lifted above all of the strife and the hubbub and the mayhem of life. I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I may have, but a few years ago, I started running. And I'm always looking for some way to, you know, lose weight or get in better shape. And there's a little loop. It leaves our house and it goes up the hill and it goes around and it goes through the park. And it's about 2 miles and it ends up back here at the house. So I started running, and at one point I'm doing pretty good, and it's mostly flat, and I cross this little bridge across the creek, and I go into the park. And then once in the park, it's flat for a little way, and then you climb up this big hill. And here I am, I'm running, I'm huffing and puffing and chugging along. And as I'm going up this hill, you know, I just think I'm going to die of a heart attack. You know, I'm breathing so hard. And I'm chugging up this hill. And so what do you do? What do you do in that circumstance? And so what I did, and this is the kind of thing that we do when we're on the path, is I put my mind on God, and I was suddenly with God. And God, it's like God and I are over sitting on the couch, and we're watching this body. And this body is huffing and puffing and just about ready to explode. And I would sit there on the couch talking to God, and I would say, now listen, God, This is quite the scene watching this body here. Do you think there's going to be a heart attack here? You know, do you think this big body's going to make it up the hill? And this detachment created this sort of feeling that it wasn't so bad. It was okay. Just keep it up. And there was even a little bit of humor in it. And just doing that, going over and sitting and being with God, just got me up the hill, got the body up the hill and over the top, and started breathing again and coming down the other side and easing up a little bit, and the heart rate came down a little bit and everything was okay. And I never forgot that, because it's a kind of a wonderful analogy for this life. Is sometimes we're really caught in the thrall of it. We're really caught in the midst of it, and it can seem overwhelming. And another time when I put this practice to use, and you might want to employ this yourself, it's pretty handy, particularly if you live in the Northwest, in the Seattle area or the Vancouver area, or even sometimes in Victoria, the traffic can get really, really tough sometimes, and it can get way slowed down and bumper to bumper. And you just feel like you really want to get where you're going. You perhaps have an appointment or you need to be somewhere on time. And it's really tough to make that drive. And you can get really anxious. You can get kind of uptight about it and, you know, gripping the wheel pretty hard. And in those moments, in those periods of time when you're the most kind of distraught about a situation that you're immersed in, take that moment and shift your focus to God. And it's not like it changes the outward circumstance, but it certainly changes our experience of it and our state of mind and our state of consciousness. And it's just like, God, this is all your play. If this is the traffic that you want to have on the road at this time, and this is the progress that we're going to make, this is what we're going to make. I want to move forward. I want to get where I'm going, but I'm with you, and this is what it is. And it just completely changes it. It takes you out of this anxious state and this sort of high level anxiety that we experience so much. And I think it was Walt Whitman, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that said, men live lives of quiet desperation. Most people live in a state of sort of low level anxiety most of the time. They're worried about things. We worry. We're concerned about getting somewhere on time. We're concerned about fulfilling our obligations. We're concerned about being what we should be, being responsible. And this creates sort of a low level of anxiety. And when you experience that in yourself, when that happens, I want you to put your mind on God and just say, God, I want you to be with me. I want you to guide me through this. I'm going to do everything that I'm supposed to do, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. But my only requirement, my only request is that you be with me. You be with me in what I do and where I'm going. And most importantly, guide my thoughts. I want you to be with me. I want you to guide my thoughts. I want you to help me make the right decisions. I want you to give me wisdom. Be with me. Be with me in the things that I do, the places that I go, when I interact with somebody. And if I get caught up in a conversation and it's starting to push my buttons and I notice myself emotionally going one way or the other, I want you to come in and step in and be with me and provide that detachment that I need to not get so drawn in. And we'll find that in situations that we might have been angry or upset, we find ourselves more calm. We find ourselves more understanding to the person that we're talking with. We find ourselves more accommodating. And it's better for those around us, but the greatest recipient of this is ourselves. It's so much nicer to go through life that way. It's so much nicer to be with God, to be with that peace, to be with that thrill of that upliftment, to feel God in the things that we do, the things that we see, the things that we say, and to have that with us. Like David G says, he says it's portable. You can take it with you wherever you go. And I think the key, you know, and like I say, it's the wonder of the path. It's the wonder of being on the path, is that we can constantly make those decisions. We can constantly make those choices and to be with God and to somehow, even in the most dire of situations or the most anxiety-driven situations or the most emotional, you know, the ones with our family, the ones with people that we typically argue with, is to somehow go to God. And even in situations where we don't know what to do and say, gosh, God, what should I do here? How should I react? How should I respond? And we just keep our minds on God in that way. It changes our lives. It changes how we live. It changes our world. David made a really interesting observation about tithing. I thought it was the most fascinating observation about tithing I've ever heard. Always when we're brought up, we're raised to think of tithing as giving 10% of our wealth or of our income to God. And that's almost always how it's presented in the churches. You know, you want to make that contribution. You want to take 10% of everything you make and devote it to the spiritual life, the spiritual path, and to help that manifest. And what David said is, he said, take 10% of your consciousness and devote it to God. So in all of these different situations in life, it rarely takes 100% of our concentration. Most things we can do almost on autopilot, driving a car, doing a task, cleaning up the house, taking care of business. We use such a small percentage of our mind doing those things. We can often sometimes find ourselves daydreaming while we're doing a task, or we're thinking about something else while we're taking care of something or taking care of some business. So David's saying, take that additional thought that you have and put your mind on God. And what's interesting about this is you think, well, if I take my consciousness or if I take my attention, my focus away from the task at hand and I put it on God, isn't the task at hand, isn't what I'm doing going to suffer? And here's the amazing part. It actually improves it. Because so much of the time when we're doing something, we're thinking about something else, we're trying to go too fast, we're rushing, and something happens. And I really notice this in kitchen work. So if you have just gotten done meditating and you're uplifted and you're in that tremendously calm and peaceful Sattvic state and you go into the kitchen to do a task, you know, all your movements just flow. You know, you take the frying pan and you set it down and you're so efficient and you're so calm. And you find that when you're in this state of God consciousness, when you're feel that, when you feel that connection, that all the things in your life and the tasks that you're doing and the movements that you're making, the labor that you're doing, or the loving that you're doing, or the listening that you're doing to someone telling you about their situation, it's all so much better. It's all so much improved. So instead of taking away from what we're doing, it makes it so much better and it enhances it. So this God path is fascinating. And as we started off talking, one of the great drivers to the God path is suffering and the suffering that we've had in our lives. So without dwelling on the past or dwelling on the future, just talking about the present situation, if you find yourself suffering in any way, if you're worried about somebody that's close to you, if you're worried about yourself, if you have anxiety about a situation, put your mind on God. And I want you to observe how that changes the situation right there in the moment. What happens? And oftentimes, you know, it doesn't erase it. It doesn't make it go away completely, but it lessens it. It makes it less sharp. It makes it less painful. And it's just a graphic example. It's an experiment that we can do within our own selves to prove David's words correct, that the source of all suffering comes from separation from God. It's so interesting. David used to come and he would visit, and one of the sort of rituals, one of the practices that we had is I would get up very early in the morning to meditate. And I'd usually be out there in my meditation chair about 5 in the morning. And David, bless his heart, he knew this. And he would come, you know, he was so dedicated. He was so amazing. And he would come at that early hour and sit next to me and meditate. And we would meditate for a long time. And it's my greatest memories of David. And, you know, people would arrange interviews with David. And when he would come, you know, they would schedule different times and they would come in and they would talk about their challenges and David would help them. And my interviews with David were always these meditation sessions where we could sit and meditate together. And when we were done, when we finally started to stir and come out of it a little bit, I never wanted to say a word. I never wanted to say a single thing because I knew if I waited long enough, David would start to speak. And he would say and deliver such pearls of wisdom. And it was so incredible and it was so wonderful. And I remember one time talking about this very subject. And when we were finished meditating, we were so uplifted. And I was in such a high state of consciousness that I realized that the worldly consciousness, the normal consciousness, what we think of as the normal consciousness, is actually a really tough, rough state of consciousness compared to this being uplifted. And so I asked David about this, and he said that suffering comes from not being in God consciousness. Suffering comes from separation from God. And I thought about that for a moment in this uplifted state, and I started thinking about mental health and mental illness. And we identify these different situations. Somebody's got some aberrant behavior. They're really upset. They're really erratic. And if this goes on, sometimes they seek professional help and they put a label on it of one kind or another. And then I started thinking that until we're God realized, we all have a form of mental illness. And what it is it's this seeking all these attachments that we have that we think are so important. And we put them before God, and that is what screens or keeps us from going to God. So it's like a form of aberrant thinking. And sometimes we don't realize it when we're in it because these things and these attachments are very, very important to us at that time. But you do realize it when you rise above it and when your consciousness elevates, you realize that seeking anything besides God is a fool's errand. It's easy to say, I know that. It's easy to talk about. It's easy to read about. it's a little different in the real world when we're out there and we're interacting and we're in our life and we get caught up, as Master said, in the drama of the movie. And he says, you know, you focus on the hero and the heroine, and you focus on the action, the pain, the suffering, the victory, the upheavals, the ups, the downs. When you focus on that, it's a recipe for being caught between these two opposites of duality. For every victory, there's a defeat. For every happiness, there's a sadness. So what Master tells us is turn around and focus on the beam. Focus on the light beam and put your consciousness there and realize that all the pictures playing out before you are just God's drama. We're part of that. We're in the drama, but we don't have to be absorbed in it. We don't have to let it dictate our state of consciousness. And this is our challenge, and this is our path. This is what we're doing. This is what we do. And we're in there fighting it out and slugging it out every day, determining where our mind goes, where our consciousness goes. And so I really encourage you in any way you can to come up with any tricks, any little methods that you have to keep your mind on God. And there's so many. There's so many wonderful ways to do that. One of the things that I've noticed is that when you look at a scene of incredible beauty, and most of us live in areas that are beautiful. I know the Pacific Northwest, where most of our group is a beautiful, gorgeous place, especially when the sun comes out and illuminates everything. And you look at that scene and you can't help but think of God. So I think nature is a tremendous place to find God. And when you're out on the trails and you're hiking, or if you're out in your garden or you're outside just taking a walk and getting some fresh air, you know, look at all the tremendous things that God has wrought and all the beauty. And that's just, it's a wonderful way to get our consciousness on God. I think there's a lot of ways to do it. I think the minute you start feeling anxiety, or the minute you feel tightness, or the minute you feel that, you know, life is not going the way that you would like it, that's also a wonderful time, a wonderful trigger that we can create to put our minds on God, to go into that consciousness. You find many reasons to put your mind on God, and we start stringing those together, and we start finding that throughout the day, our minds are on God most of the time. And it's a great transition. It's what we're here for. It's this transition from the human to the divine, to human consciousness. And human consciousness is defined by having those attachments, to being caught up in that drama, and that transition into God consciousness or divine consciousness, where you're really in this place of peace and upliftment and joy, ever new bliss. It's exciting. It's ever changing. It's what I used to tell David is it's the cool in cool. Everybody's looking for the coolest thing. You know, I want to get the new furniture because it's so cool. You know, I want to get this new car because it's so cool. And I realized one time that this cool thing that we're searching for, this thing that's new, this thing that's innovative, this thing that's different, it's creative, it hasn't been done before, it's this exciting new aspect of life. That is God. That is God, that thing that we seek, that novelty, that newness, that freshness, that excitement. That's God. We seek God, we get that. We get our heart's desire. We get everything that we're seeking without even knowing that we're seeking it. When you make that connection with God, you become uplifted. You become thrilled with what God is giving you and what God is showing you. And you realize that, my goodness gracious, why have I been seeking anything else? And yet our consciousness floats back down. We get back into earthly human consciousness and we're right back in it again. And it's this process, this path that we're on, this spiritual path, is this process of realizing God and then drifting back down and realizing God and realizing that God is everything, drifting back down and going back and forth and back and forth. And always striving to be more in that consciousness and more in that consciousness. And as Lahiri Maasai said, striving, 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 one day the goal. It's like climbing a mountain. You don't think that mountain is ever going to end. You keep one foot in front of the other. You keep going, and you are not going to turn around, and you are not going to slide backwards. You keep trying. You keep going. And one day you realize that this is a goal that can be attained. We know this. We have David as a tremendous example. We have Mother as a tremendous example. We have Master as a tremendous example. You can tell they're God realized by their writings, by what they say, by their state of consciousness. And if you're lucky enough to be in their actual physical presence, you can tell by the vibration that they emanate from themselves and how they lift you up in their presence. So we know of that. This isn't theoretical for us. We're not reading about somebody that attained God consciousness 2,000 years ago where they say, oh, that happened then. Those miracles happened then, but they can't happen now. We are so fortunate to have this example in front of us right in our own lives, is to see what it is to attain that level of consciousness. And we don't just see it in David and see it in Mother and see it in Master. We see it in ourselves. When we meditate, when we put our minds on God and we put our full attention on God and we put our consciousness on God, we feel that upliftment. Nobody can take that away from you. Nobody can take that experience away from you. There's all these different theologies out there. There's all these different paths. There's all these different religions. And sometimes you're going to run into somebody that says, oh, no, your way isn't really right. Your way isn't the right way. You should believe this over here. Well, you have something. And what you have is your own experience. You have God experience. When we meditate the way that we're taught, with our full concentration on God, and we become uplifted, we have that experience. Nobody can take that from you, and don't let anybody tell you your experience wasn't everything that you felt that it was. And we go back, and we go back for more. And we keep striving and we keep climbing that mountain. And yes, we come back down. Yes, we come back down into the valley. And sometimes it's foggy and sometimes it's hard to see. And we make the effort to climb right back up again to those clear blue skies to see the clarity of what this world really is and what we are in God. This has to be the greatest path there is because we get that firsthand experience. We get that firsthand God knowledge. We don't have to take our teachings and our beliefs from a book or secondhand from somebody, a minister. We have the ability, and what we're taught in this line, in this path, is to experience this for ourselves. We all do it. We all meditate. We've had those experiences. And it's just a matter of continuing to seek that consciousness out. And what's so fascinating about this is that you finally get to see this difference. You get to see what it's like to be lifted up in God consciousness and have that thrill and that upliftment and that peace. And then you go back to regular consciousness and you see what that's like. And you cannot help but contrast the two. And after a while, you just start going, I want to be with God. I want to be with God all the time. This becomes a stronger and stronger drive within us. And it becomes an overwhelming drive. It becomes the greatest passion in our lives. Mother had the name of a talk once that I never forgot because I thought it perfectly describes this path when we start getting caught up and realizing that there's a state of consciousness that we want to be in, this uplifted state, and we want to leave the state of worldly consciousness behind, and we want to leave it behind forever. And we become obsessed with making that progress. And Mother called it the magnificent obsession. And I love the name of that talk because it describes this so well. If for some reason you're not feeling that within yourself, perhaps you love God, you want to be with God, you love the path, you love reading from the masters, you love listening to the masters, you love listening to David, you love reading his books, but you don't feel that overwhelming passion, that overwhelming drive to God, then work on that. Work on that. You have some ability. You have determination. You have tremendous power to determine your own spiritual path. And one of the things that you can do is you can pray to God. You say, I want you to take me. I want you to be with me. I want you to keep my mind on you all the time. Don't let me forget. Don't let me forget for a moment. And if I get caught up in this world and if I start spinning down the drain and I start going down a bad path and I start becoming upset about this and that, step in. Remind me that you're there. Lift me up. Take you me up in your arms. Take me unto your heart. Be with me. Never forget me, God, and make sure I never forget you. Ananda Moyama said, you could not think of me if I did not think of you first. What that means is that if we're aware of God, if we're thinking of God, if our minds are on God, it's because God drew us to him. God awakened that consciousness within us. It is God drawing us back to himself. We think we have to try so hard. We think we have to make so much effort, and it is good to make an effort. It's good to put our minds on God. It's good to strive. But just know that it's God drawing us to himself. As Krishna said to Arjuna, the victory is assured. You just need to play your part. We need to keep our minds focused on the charioteer. We need to keep our minds focused on the highest, on Krishna, on Christ, on that third eye point, that upward momentum, that spirit that lifts us up out of a chaotic world, that brings us the peace and the joy that we've been seeking. We learn how to do that. We learn how to do it step by step. It becomes stronger and more powerful as we proceed upon the path. We learn how to do that and we leave suffering behind. That doesn't mean that the drama won't still play out on the screen, that all the light pictures from the projector won't continue to play. It doesn't mean that there won't be wars and upheavals in this world. It won't mean that there won't be disappointments and things that happen. But the way that we go through it and our experience of it will be completely changed. We'll not only be in a place of peace and comfort, but we'll have confidence and assurance that things will work out just as they should. And you know, that goes right down to our own physical presence. We say, well, what if I get sick? What if I get injured? What if I experience pain? What if I was to even die? The key is, and the trick is, and the whole purpose of us being on this path is to be with God in all of that, in all of the good, in all of the what we call good, in all what we call bad, in all the ups and downs, even to the point of leaving this body. Being with God through all of it. And you'll find that your journey will be changed. Your life will be changed. Your consciousness will be changed. It is a tremendous way to go. It is a tremendous way to go through this life. United Airlines used to have a slogan. They said, United, the only way to fly. I get the biggest kick out of that because I think being with God, the only way to fly, the only way to go through this life with any degree of comfort and assurance and peace and guidance. There's been a tremendous path demonstrated for us. We've been shown it in every way. We know what to do, and we're all doing it. We're all on the path. And I would just encourage you to do it that much more, to take God with you everywhere you go. And I think our meditations are tremendous. The techniques that have been given, the upliftment that we and peace that we feel in meditation. And if you're having a hard time in meditation, just keep concentrating, keep putting your mind on God and ask God to help you. Ask God to help lifting you up in meditation. But also it's all those other times of the day that we're not sitting down to meditate. When we're driving our car, when we're at work, when we're interacting with our children, when we're interacting with our spouse, when we're doing jobs, when we're trying to get things done, when sometimes it feels like the world isn't cooperating. Be with God in all those times. Make it a practice. Bring him with you wherever you go and watch how your life changes. It's the most tremendous thing we've been given. It's the greatest gift we could possibly receive. And it is up to us to make the absolute best of it. This path is an incredible adventure. It's the best, most adventurous, most exciting thing a human being can do. And it's our privilege to be on it. And it's especially our privilege to have brothers and sisters on this path that help us, that encourage us, that boost us up and lift us up by their example when we're feeling that we're not doing our best. We really do have a tremendous thing here. And I've been appreciative of it forever and am still every day. So let us continue. Let us keep our minds on God. Let's watch our consciousness. When we start to deviate, when we start to fall off, when we feel that anxiety, when we feel that suffering, just bring yourself right back to God. And that's our work. That's our path. And what a joyous path it is. It's a privilege. So, please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Feel the wonder and the beauty
of the glorious, thy glorious presence in every part of my being.
Of thy glorious presence in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body.
I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light.
My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Bliss. Amen.
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 Thank you for being here. It's been such a delight to spend some time with everyone. I'm jealous of Larry that he gets to do this every Wednesday night. What a wonderful thing to come together with our spiritual family. So delightful.
Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome. Have a tremendous week, and may God keep you and bless you.
Hari Om.
Till we meet again. Hari Om.